Session number 15736, Ernie Tompkins, Reel 8.
Mr. Tompkins, Reel 8. Now, you're telling me about some of the incidents when you were the charge hand at the test bed for the Bristol Aircraft Company. You said one time you saved the test. What was that story you were going to tell?
What was that?
What was that story?
I'd moved, of course, it's done on what they call the East Test. I had two occasions. They called me in the office. Now, when I went onto the test, they had what they call exactor controls, hydraulic controls for the throttles. And apparently they scrapped them as being no good. They asked me to put a control on a constant speed pump, which is on the front of the engine, on the cable hanger. The man that was sort of progress chaser went to ask if they were ready to start. That's all, well, as far as I got, was it?
Yes.
He said, are we all right to get away, you know? He was a sort of a progress chaser. And this was a development engine they had on there.
And what had you done? Could you just explain that again?
Oh, I'll come to that, yes.
Sure.
So he said... are we all ready to go? The chap said, yes. He said, what about the constant speed pump? Have they put the control on that? He said, yes. He said, where is it? He said, there. No, that, not that, that. He said, that's not good, that's not... Well, he said, that's it. And he tried it. I said, who did that? He said, I did, you know, see. So they used it. And it was very satisfactory.
Were there any other instances you remember of things you did on the test bed that made a big difference?
Yes. Of course, I told you, I brought all the pipes up. I mentioned that. You got
that's
that.
That's not on tape, no. That's the other bit that's missing. What did you do with the pipes?
Isn't that on the tape?
No.
Oh, well, yes, well, I'll tell you that again. The shop steward, union shop steward, came to me and he said, Ernie, he said, can you do anything about these darn pipes? I said, what's wrong? Well, he said, he mentioned a certain chap's name, he'd been scalded. And what they had to do was to go down in the pit and take these hot pipes off the engine, and the oil would gush down and... into trays and all that sort of business, you know, mucky job. So he said, they've had enough. And unless something's done, we should have to shut down, see. So I was able to bring the pipes up to the side of the engine. So all they had to do, undo the nuts of the unions, and the oil would go into a trough and into a tray. It put that job right. That's... I had another little thing, Peter. A tester, because these things used to crop up. A tester came to me and he said, he wanted to get off. He said, I got to take that engine off. He said, I can't, I want to tighten up the HIOP nut. And you can't, you can put a spanner on it, but you can't move the spanner. It's right up in the stand, see? It's a big nut, an inch and a half nut. He said, for inch and a half pipe. What can you do about it? I said, I'll think that one out. Frank Woods, his name was. So what I did was convert an ordinary ratchet spanner into an open-jawed spanner. Now, a ratchet spanner, you will go all the way round, as you know. Well, now, all they had to do was to put the spanner on and go like this. And when they got to the end, they press a button and bring it back again. go like that. They could get at it, see, with this, without taking the engine off. And the first night it was pinched. I made a couple more, and they kept them in the office, one for nights and one for days, and they had to sign for them. That saved a lot of money. Being able to tighten that, the H is what they call the high initial oil pressure nut. And it's a biggish nut, see. And as I say, you could find perhaps, you might be able to put a spanner on it, but you, there's not room enough to move the spanner. But what I did was put it so you only had to, you had this, just like this, see. Just put one notch at a time, but you could tighten it up all right.
Now, you don't. You started on the Pegasus, was it?
That was a.
What other engines were you working on during the war? What was the Pegasus was?
I'll tell you another case. Yes, we had the Pegasus, the Taurus, the Hercules, the Centaurus, the Orpheus. Any more?
Were they progressions, or were they all different engines?
The Taurus was the first single row of the first jet, not jet engine, sleeve valve engine. The Taurus, see. The Pegasus is a poppet valve engine.
What's the difference?
Well, the valves were sleeves inside the cylinders. See, with an ordinary poppet valve, well, of course, you know, I had this sort of business, see.
Opening and shutting.
But I could tell you a bit about this is in my records about the Frenchman giving instruction on the. I told you about that,
you
didn't
I? You told me about that.
Yeah. Well, I will remember one thing. The Centaurus engine was their highest powered engine, and it was a double bank engine, see. Sleeve valve job. And a tester said to me one day, he said, they got trouble with this Centaurus. That's, they were testing it. He was a tester on it. That was their first Centaurus. He said, we got trouble. I said, what's trouble? He said, overheating on the master cylinder, see. And I casually said, oh, I said, bigger clearance on the piston. It was talking about. I said, just all bigger tears on the business. He said, think they haven't thought of that? I said, I don't know. I said, that's what I think. Well, later, I think it was the superintendent. Yeah, he was the superintendent I was talking to. Ernie, he said, you know, we had trouble with the Centaurus. I said, yes. You said it wants a bigger clearance on the piston. I said, yes. He said, well, that's what it was. No, then. He said, that was no idle guess of yours. You had a reason for saying that. You seemed to say it with a lot of conviction. You evidently were pretty sure about your ground, see. Well, I said, if you want to know why, I'd tell you. I said, the Bristol engine is cooled from front to rear. Now, I said, it doesn't matter how effective your baffling is and fins and all that, you get a certain amount of difference in the temperatures. The lead inside is cooled more efficiently than the rear, see. With that, you get different expansions. Otherwise, you get what they call ovality in the cylinder, see, owing to uneven cooling. Although they thought they're well finned and depend. After all, they're a high-powered engine. You've got this flame inside all the time. So he said, why did you say about the bigger clearance? Well, I said, that engine's cooled from front to rear. I said, and you get a certain amount of ovality, but I said, they can put a bigger clearance on the piston and get away with it, because it's only one. I said, what difference it makes in oiling and compression? That is not that matter. Though I said, with a rotary engine, they revolve. I said, and the cooling is lateral. Otherwise, the cylinder is all cooled on the leading side. The engine's going round, you see. I said, every cylinder, they get what they call ovality. Same as I'm telling you. No, I said, they have to have a bigger clearance on the pistons. But that in itself wouldn't be any good because you'd have to have over-oiling perhaps and all that sort of thing. So I said, what they do is to use what they call obdurator rings, which is a flexible 70% copper and 30% silver obdurator ring, which takes up the ovality. He said, where'd you get that from? I said, I read books. Well, of course, that's in our teaching with the rotary engines, not see. I mean, my instruction with the RAF was very useful down there very often. But they'd not, none of those people knew that. I always kept my mouth shut.
How did you? Was there? You mentioned the trade unions. Did the trade unions and management and non-trade? Did you all work together well?
They did afterwards. They got friendly. I never get in much trouble. I never get. I used to get foreigners because I could do a job myself and there's no charge to the firm. You see, I'm paid on a. As I say, I'm a supervision look. I've got a standard wage. There's no jobs. I'm not chargeable on any particular job. So if they wanted a foreigner done, they didn't come to me. So I had one case, and this is one of the big shots, mind. He rang me up and he said, could I repair his number plate on his car? Yes, sir. Okay. So I went to the garage. And a chap named Griffiths, a chap named England, I remember them well. I said, I mentioned the number of the car, see? What's wrong that for? I said, I'd have a look at the number plate on it. Oh, here it is, look. Oh, I see. All right. What's got to do? I said, well, I got to repair this. Oh, all right. So I took it to the shops and I ran this Mr. Ninnis up. I said, I'm afraid your number plate is in such a state, I can't finish it today. I said, do you mind if I put a temporary number plate on for you to go home today? Because I can't let you have it till tomorrow with what I had to do. Oh, that's all right, he said. So I went over to the garage and daubed a white chalk, white paint on a bit of plate and hung it on the car. These two chaps came and had a look. God, blimey, he said. I hadn't been there very long, mind. Gosh, he said, you know whose car that is? I said, yes, I know. He said, had you expect him to go out with that on? Oh, I said, he please himself, can't he? I reckon there's a sack waking for you put on a job like that, see. Oh, I thought that wouldn't worry me. Well, the next day I made a new number plate. I had it stove enameled. I had new letters I made. I got a chap helping out on this, mind. I didn't do it all myself, not to get it done in the time, see. And after all, I was the charge on. So I had to get the plates polished, and it was as good a plate, if not better than what was in originally. So I went back to the garage and put this plate on. These chaps came round and watched the proceedings. He said, all right, he said, we'll apologise, he said. He said, you're a tradesman, aren't you? He said, we should have known better. He admitted, he said, that's a new plate complete. I said, yes. I said, I rang up Mr. Ninnis, told him what I was going to do, and he said it was quite all right. Ah, oh, that's all right, he said. And I was friends with them ever after. You know,
and they were in the trade union, were they?
They were trade unions, really, but I wasn't.
Did you ever join it?
No, I never did.
Any reason?
I didn't have to, because when I went out, I could have got a job even back where I came from. So I'd never wanted a job. See, I was always there like a, I was all right. And there was no, this is the war, you see. If it hadn't been for the war, it might have been a bit different. But although it was before the war, I went there.
What about the first jet engine you worked on? Which was that? The first jet engine you worked on, what was that?
The first jet engine that they had, they were testing an Avon engine. Now, there's another case there. They were testing an Avon engine, which is a Rolls engine.
What year would that be?
Oh, you've asked me that somewhere at the time. I can't tell you exactly.
Okay.
And about 5 years before I left, I suppose. Or middle 50s, wouldn't it be? Something like that, would it?
Didn't they work on jet engines in the, earlier than that?
No. That's the first engine. They made this first, this is the first Avon engine. They made it to Rolls specification, because it was a Rolls design engine. They put it on test, and they were down in thrust. Now, to find out whether it was the compressor blades or not, what meant they would have a trial and error. They'd have to make a set and take a chance and all that. So one of the bosses came to me and said, do you think you could increase the pitch on a set of compressor blades for this evening? Well, I said, you better have a word with Tommy Wright. He lives next door to my brother-in-law, as a matter of fact, my son-in-law now, Tommy Wright. He was in charge of the, what they call the blade forge. And I said, have a word. He said, oh, that's all right. He said, would you bump these blades? And they wouldn't be used again. They want to use these blades to try and see if increasing the pitch would cure their trouble. They could always scrap the blades after, but that would have been better than wasting days and days, you see, making sets and all that. And I bumped these things, much to the astonishment of the people that came and saw me doing it. We weren't supposed to be blade people. And a chap on the press, you know, the flight press. And apparently it worked. They got their thrust, and they made... I went up now, look at the... They got a profile department. I went up there, they put this blade on before and after I treated it. And true enough, I see exactly what I did. And that enabled me to carry on and do the rest. I always had something on. It's quite a job. Well, look, when I left, and I got the photographs there.
When did you leave?
Eh?
When did you leave?
1964. I was 65 then, look.
And what were you when you left?
Only a foreman. I was foreman then. I've been foreman for years, you see, after the war, look. After the war, I maybe straight went on to foreman, look, although there wasn't the work that I had to do otherwise.
Still on the test bed.
I was getting the money then, look. And I got photographs in there showing me when I left, the word got round. As I said, I might find a photograph. The word got round that the manager was coming down to pay me some money they owed me. Because when I went on the staff, I wasn't getting... there was a bonus paid for everybody, £5 a week, a year bonus for the workforce. Everybody had it, see. Well, I had to have that to draw. It was about 90 quid or something I had to draw. And the manager came down to present it, and I had the whole shop full of people. I got the photograph there. The whole shop full of people. I went down to the country club at Brislington, and that was got for me. That was quite an event. I went down to the ship at Oldbury, a pub job, you know, and we went to a place down at, this was the supervision gave me this, down Western Way. Another place, forget the name from that, to a hotel down there. So I had quite a lot of farewells, you know. They called me up in the office. there was 4 or 5 hours, and apologising because I had to retire. I said, well, I hadn't asked to stay on. They said, well, the rule is everybody got to retire now, even from the managing director down. Well, I said, it might have been useful because my son was at Cambridge. It might have been a bit useful to help him out a bit more. But I said, I could manage. And I left. Of course, you know, Mike,